name. But every mom has a role in their life to fulfill, as good manners and kindness in their kids they instill. Each year there's a day, there's a special day in mid-May to celebrate mothers in some special way. But mom, every day of the year you should know that for me, you're as special as any mom could ever be. I love you, Mom. God bless you.
Senator Olson.
Mom, you were in Norway yesterday, so I wasn't able to spend the day with you. I just want to say from across the ocean, Happy Mother's Day.
My mother died last year, and I'd like to tell you a couple of stories about her. In the week following her death, I was going through her address book to make calls to her friends. And there were the numbers of all the radio and TV stations in the Twin Cities and a number for the governor's office. She frequently called to voice her opinion about this issue or that to the media. The most memorable occurrence for me was a program on NPR about Eleanor Roosevelt, one of my girlhood heroes. I read her column every month in the Ladies' Home Journal as I was growing up. The program was a retrospective on Roosevelt's life, and the discussion for a while centered around the obstacles she had faced. I had not listened to the program, but my mother enthusiastically reported it to me. I called in, she said. "You did what, Mother?" I said. "I called in and told them that one of the biggest obstacles that Mrs. Roosevelt had to overcome was that she was so ugly." "You actually said that on the radio?" "Yes, of course. And they agreed with me." "Did you mention that you were related to me?" I said. "No," my mother said, ever the ego deflator. "Why would you think I would do that?" My mother was my best friend, and indeed her middle name was Friend. One of the conditions she struggled with at the end of her life was dementia related to Alzheimer's. But she and I came to terms with it and created a blessing for one another. Every time I visit her in the nursing home, I told her how much I loved her, how beautiful she was, how lucky I was to have her for a mother, and what a great friend she was to me. She rewarded me with one of her great smiles and told me how much she loved me. We did this every time I visited. We can count memory loss as a curse, but for my mother and me, it was indeed a blessing. Every time we spoke to one another of our love, it was brand new. Her smile was a light on my life. She told me that she was really pleased to get to know me better when she spent a month with me prior to her move to assisted living. It was an amazing experience for both of us, and I felt the same way. Senator Bonnell.
I'm sure that each one of us here could say something very special about our mothers and the impact they had on our lives and us being here today, but I have to take a moment to do that because my mom surprised me and she's in the gallery. So I hadn't planned to say anything, but now I shall. My mom, as I was growing up, was a very active volunteer. She created a curriculum called Project Charlie that has been done all throughout the country, and its purpose was to raise children's self-esteem. She actually started a youth counseling agency in the Western suburbs called Storefront Youth Action. And then when I had my first son and I was struggling with how hard it was to continue my career and being a mother, she went into business for herself and she started a company called Work Family Life, and it's now grown into a newsletter that's used all over the country by corporations around the issues that women have balancing work and family, and she actually speaks all over the country on this subject. She lobbies in Washington and is very well known in her field. So I honor all of our mothers here today, and I thank my mother for being here.
Are there others who wish to speak that we did not know about? Then we end with Senator Moir, or Senator Parasol. Senator Parasol.
Good afternoon, members. I do miss my mom a lot. She took a great pain to, I came from a family of five girls. So she had the pleasure of trying to teach us everything that women do as ladies, as girls, as grandmothers. And I miss her, and so do my sisters. But I want to just share something with you that I had a student group come in this morning, and I'm fond of asking them often, how many of you girls would like to be the first president of the United States that's a woman? And the hands go in the air. And so then I said, all right, let's give the boys a chance. How many of you think it should be just reserved for males? The boys' hands went in the air. I said, well, I'm on the girls' side. But literally, it's interesting to see that they're attuned to even say yes when you ask a question like that when they're such young people. And so I think it's a tribute to where women have come.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. And thank you, members, for permitting us this little fun and memorable time. My mom was one of those women who was a town girl and married one of those farm boys. And she came to the farm life and adapted quite well. And I remember many things about her, especially her nurturing nature. You know, when animals were left orphans and some of them were brought into our house to bottle feed during the night, little piglets and little lambs. And I'm afraid I've still picked up this habit, and we're incubating baby ducklings in our basement right now. But my mom was always very special and very faithful and God-filled, and she's still with us here today. In fact, we celebrated her quite a bit yesterday, her seven children. But the one thing she always did that I think was very important for all of us is she prayed a lot for us. And she said there were three things she always prayed for her children, and that was courage, commitment, and compassion. And that is a prayer that I pray for my children, too, that they will have courage, commitment, and compassion. And today I ask that for all members of our body here today as we wrap up our final week of the legislature and finish our work for the good of the people of Minnesota, because after all, we are the people who are looking after the state, just like mothers look after their families.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you. I can't resist telling you a little bit about my mother. She was a first-generation immigrant. She came to this country at the age of 9 and could not speak a word of English. She graduated from her high school class at the age of 16 as valedictorian. But it was the Depression, and so she could not go on to college. She was the sole breadwinner in her family. So I think she would be very pleased to see me where I am today. The things I learned from her was to work hard, to be frugal, and then to take care of family. So this is in honor of my mother.
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Believe it or not, us guys have mothers too. And so we want to thank them for all they've done. And just to show you that mothers never stop being mothers, my mother sent me down with a homemade banana cream pie. And it's up in my office if anybody wants to come and try it.
Without a fork, he just pushed his face in there. And
are there others? Senator Fredrickson.
Senator Rest, I think we should add just a little more gender balance to this. I'm glad Senator Tomasoni had nerve enough to stand up and say that. I, too, had a very wonderful mother. I'm the fifth of six children. My mother was almost 40 years old when I was born, and I have a younger daughter. She was a very hardworking farmer, taught me the benefits of hard work and perseverance, and she was very much a believer in education. She stressed education. I wanted to make one other comment, not about my mother. One of the previous speakers said that there was a woman elected to the Minnesota State Senate in 1927, I believe, and the next one was elected in 1975. A few of us happened to have served with the individual who served from 1975 until about 1990, I believe, and that was Senator Nancy Bratis. And she was a very strong individual, a very strong Minnesota senator, Rochester and all of Minnesota and the Mayo Clinic benefited greatly from her having served in this body, and I wanted to acknowledge that Senator Bradis was elected in 1975, and I think when she was elected, she was the only woman senator.
Senator Moan.
It is never easy to be a first, but a first means that there will always be seconds, thirds, fourths, and now look at all of us in this room. So with deep respect for all the men in our lives, here is a prayer poem in honor of women friends. Let there be in my life those women who, knowing and unknowing, flank my soul with courage, comfort, a sense of place, home, all of you. Let them come, tiptoeing their gifts, filling my heart's halls with the food and drink of laughter and tears, visions and memories. Let them come, stomping out the wrath of indignities, indecencies, injustices, indescribable agonies of many sisters gone before and the many still to come. Let them live and move and take residence in me. I shall risk it all, where at last we cannot escape love, nor a goddess named sisters.
Mr. President, we appreciate the attention of the Senate in this tribute to women in our lives, and we know that each of us in our own hearts can add to these tributes. Thank you, Mr. President.
I can't see. I have a couple of this shape at home that I wear in the garden and in parades, and they're getting to look kind of bleachy and out-colored, and I just thought they were too faded, so I left them home. So many hats I have left. I even took a hat-making class with my sisters.
This is a resolution honoring the members of the Minnesota Association of Occupational Health Nurses for 25 years of volunteer work. And we're in recess, so I think you could applaud these fine nurses, okay? that.
Mr. President, I propose that we go through the agenda, take up the Veterans Commissioner confirmation, and then we will recess. We are waiting for the transportation bill to come over from the House, and that will give the caucuses a chance to visit about the transportation bill.
Okay.
And so, Mr. President, why don't we walk through and...
Okay, the first order of business will be messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file. As amended by the House, in which amendments to concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested, Senate File 145, a bill for an act relating to energy, providing for community-based energy development, etc. Senate File 145 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Albany Mathew as Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Senator Solon, Pretner Solon, did you have a motion to make?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, or Mr. President, I move that Senate File number 145 be taken from the table.
No, it's before us. It's not. It wasn't
on. Yeah, it's not on the table. Make the next motion, then, please.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendment by the House to Senate File number 145 and that a conference committee of 5 members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the Pretner-Solon motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of 3 members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House to the following Senate file, 463, a bill for an act relating to notaries public. There has been appointed as such committee on the part of the House, Representatives Hortman, Lane, and Della Forest. Senate File 463 is herewith returned to the Senate. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on Senate File 238, repass said bill in accordance with report. In accordance with the report of the committee so adopted, Senate File 238, a bill for an act related to health, establishing public policy to protect employees and general public from the hazards of secondhand smoke. Senate File 238 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Albany Mathew, its Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
The next order of business is reports of committees. There's one printed on today's agenda. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President.
Excuse me, there's one to be read also.
Senator Rest from the Committee on State and Local Government Operations and Oversight, to which was referred Senate File number 430, a bill for an act relating to retirement, correcting errors and omissions in the 2006 Omnibus Retirement and Other Legislation. Report the same back with a recommendation the bill be amended. And when so amended, the bill do pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, on this report, members, this is the omnibus pension bill. And under Rule 2.3, it would have to go to the Rules Committee before it goes to the Finance Committee. I'd like to make a motion to suspend the late bill rule so it can go right to the Finance Committee so we don't have to hold a Rules Committee to hear the bill, to send it to Finance. Okay. Mr. President, I would move that Joint Rule 2.03 be suspended as it relates to the committee report on Senate File number 430.
All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Then, Mr. President, I'd move the committee reports printed and read, and now read by the Secretary, be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Next order of business is motions and resolutions. There are a number of resolutions printed on today's agenda. Without objection, these resolutions will be sent to the Rules Committee.
Mr. President?
Senator Pogemiller.
On motions.
Let's stay under motion, on motions.
Take up the 12th order of business.
Yeah, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. There are three printed on today's agenda. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills.
And then, Mr. President?
Senator Pogemiller.
Staying on motions, I would propose that we take up the the confirmation calendar related to Department of Veterans Affairs, Commissioner Clark DeRude, and yield to Senator Vickerman.
Senator Vickerman.
Mr. President, I move that the appointment of Commissioner of Veterans Affairs be taken from the table.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Vickerman.
Mr. President, I move that in accordance with a report from the Committee on Agriculture and Veterans reported January 25, 2007, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Department of Veterans Affairs Commissioner Clark DeRude, 5501 Humboldt Circle, Minneapolis, Hennepin County, effective January 2, 2007, for a term expiring on January 3, 2011. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, it was a unanimous decision in our Veterans and Ag Committee. And the reason I would like to move that along, because a very important day is coming here, June 9th. We're going to dedicate the memorial. I thought it would be only fitting that we would confirm Mr. DeRude at this time. I would ask for your support.
Senator Vickerman renews his motion on the confirmation of Clark DeRude as the Department of Veterans Affairs Commissioner. Discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, then I would move a recess till the call of the chair. And okay. Why don't we tentatively say 3 o'clock, and just see where we're at. We're waiting for the House. We're waiting for the transportation bill. So,
On
Senator Senjum, Senator Wergen's 3 o'clock. Okay, so right. Tentatively 3 o'clock, but it's to the call of the chair.
Okay. On the motion to recess, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The Senate stands in recess. Senate is under call.
91 votes.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant at Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator.
Mr. President, members, I'd propose that we take up the conference committee report on House File 946. We've received the message from the House, and then after that, we would take up on general orders Senator Pappas's bill on the DREAM Act. I think it's third or fourth. Senate File 653. So, Mr. President, is there a report from the House?
Messages from the House.
Message, my apology, message from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on House File 946 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. House File 946, a bill for an act related to transportation finance, appropriating money for transportation, etc. House File 946, as it was transmitted to the Senate, signed Albany Mathew as Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on House File 946 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
Senator Murphy, on the conference committee report.
On the motion.
Do we do that right away, or don't we? Okay, on the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
There should be discussion. He should address his motion.
Yeah, wait, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the recommendations of the Conference Committee report on House File 946 be rejected and that the bill be re-referred to the Conference Committee as formally constituted for further consideration.
Okay, discussion on the Jungbauer motion.
Mr. President, members, I think the Conference Committee on the Transportation did a really good job. I think there's a few things that could still be taken care of and that we could vote on it in a very bipartisan fashion. As I mentioned in further statements earlier about property tax reform, property tax relief, members, transportation is the number one or number two issue for all our cities and counties. I think that we could hammer out a few minor details on this in the conference committee yet, and some of the ideas might be the half-cent sales tax. I think that that's a good idea, but I think it needs a referendum. Well, I think it needs to be a little further detailed as to how the counties can all institute it simultaneously, put a little more pressure on them. We definitely need the money for transportation. I don't know about the rest of you members. I drive 36 to 39 miles each way every day, and the roads are congested. The roads are bad. We need more money for roads. I further think, members, that we could put a couple of little details in there on how we can link full transportation funding with true property tax reform. Again, members, being it's the number one or number two highest cost item for every city and county, we need to do something. We need to get those details in this. And with just a few minor tweaks, and Senator Murphy and I have talked about some of those tweaks, I could wholeheartedly support it as the lead Republican on transportation. And I think we could get out of here with a major transportation bill that directly links transportation and property tax reform. And members, I do urge your support on returning this to the conference committee.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members, I would hope that you would resist voting for the Jungbauer Amendment. Senator Jungbauer has been a very valuable member of our transportation committee and has also sat through the hours and hours of testimony that we've taken from people from all across the state. And Senator Jungbauer is truly a champion to try to build a better Minnesota by building a better transportation system. Unfortunately, if this bill at this date is returned back to conference committee, we may not get another shot at it. Folks, we sat down and we hammered this out in conference committee. I believe that we reached a reasonable compromise between the House and the Senate, and we also made concessions to the governor in regards to bonding, troopers, a lot of the things that the governor wanted. We adopted his language. I think that this is the best product that we can come up with at this date, and I would hope that you would resist the temptation to vote for the Jungbauer Amendment.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, a request for a roll call, please.
There will be a roll call.
Mr. President and members, I'll just be very brief. I think certainly on our side, at every opportunity that we have, knowing that a bill is going to be vetoed, we would just implore the majority to think about a re-referral. These are things that we can work out. So last week, we'd just as soon see this bill go through smoothly as opposed to going again through veto land. It's not a fun process. We don't want to be there. The majority doesn't want to be there. I would strongly urge a vote to re-refer for this particular bill. Thank you.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, I would impose a call of the Senate.
Senate's under call.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move that further proceedings under the call be dispensed with and the sergeant be instructed to bring in the absent members. And, Mr. Chairman, may I also ask that this be for the balance of the bill?
Okay. For the balance of the bill. Any further discussion? All in, for the call. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Further discussion on the Jungbauer motion to reject the conference committee report? Seeing none, the secretary will take the roll on the Jungbauer motion to reject the conference committee report.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that those not voting be excused from voting.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Clerk will close the roll. There being 21 ayes and 39 nays, the amendment does not prevail. The motion does not prevail. The question now is on the Murphy motion to adopt the conference committee report. Any discussion on the Murphy motion? All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Third reading.
House file number 946, a bill for an act relating to transportation finance, appropriating money for transportation and related purposes, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. Senator Roblin.
Mr. President, I do have a summary that was recently received, but I would appreciate it if the author of the bill could go through this a little bit for us and talk about some of the provisions in it.
I kind of tried to say that a little earlier, but I must not have been very clear. But Senator Murphy, maybe you could explain some of the changes.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You are on a roll, and I couldn't get your attention. But first of all, members, I want to thank, once again, make an emphatic thank you to the staff that put the bill together and helped us from the beginning of session up until this point to make sure that our bill was correct, all the numbers worked out. These folks work tireless hours. They're in here on Saturday night, all day Sundays sometimes, and they go unnoticed, so thank you to the staff. I also want to thank our conference committee members and the conference committee members on behalf of the House. We had several meetings, very cordial meetings. We exchanged a lot of ideas. And at the end of the day, we were able to come to an agreement over a bill that is actually going to move Minnesota forward. We're looking, members, at billions of dollars of under construction in our state for transit, roads, bridges, airports, waterways, and railways. Over $1 billion of underinvestment in the state of Minnesota every year, and that's just for MnDOT roads. That's $1 billion of underinvestment every year for less than 18% of the roads in the state of Minnesota. Folks, if we add in the largest portion of our transportation system, which are county roads, and then add in our municipal roads, and then add in the underfunding on top of the transit area, that number now is $1.8 billion of underinvestment every year. Now, some would say $1.8 billion is too much, and you're throwing everything in there, including the kitchen sink. No, folks, that is to move us forward marginally. If we want to take a huge step forward, the number is closer to $3 billion. This bill moves us forward. It moves us forward. Let's say that one more time. We are going to raise over $700 million of new investment in Minnesota in our roads, bridges, waterways, airways, and transitways. Folks, there's been a packet of news releases that were passed out to everybody, and I would hope that you'd take a look at one in particular, and it is dealing with one of the most rapid reasons why property taxes are going up year in and year out, and that is because we are asking locals to foot more and more of the state responsibility when it comes to building roads. Our property taxes are stressed out. Most townships, almost 50% of the property tax, almost 50% is going to roads. In our cities, it's well over 30%. In most counties, it's well over 33%. So folks, let's not be pushing another tax onto property taxes. Let's step up and do the right thing and pay as we go. Now, our committee heard hours and hours of testimony in relationship to the death toll on Minnesota highways. Our death toll is starting to come down. And that's because we've stepped up our efforts on enforcement, and we've also spent money on those intersections and routes of regional significance where those fatalities are occurring. But that leaves a tremendous hole in the rest of the state. We heard about the congestion tax. Now, even the State Chamber of Commerce says for the average metropolitan family, that congestion tax is over $700 a year. Mary Peters, the United States Transportation Secretary, says that number is closer to $1,500 of congestion tax that each Minnesota family in the metropolitan area pays every year. $1,500. That's what the Federal Transportation Administration has said. It costs $1,500 for every family in the metropolitan area due to congestion. What we have going on in the state of Minnesota also equates into a hidden business tax. And let me explain that to you. Now, the UPS CEO, the CEO of UPS, said that in a year, and he was talking about documented evidence that came out of a study from the Brookings Institute, and he said, according to that study, it is costing the United States $63 billion a year nationally because we are doing little, if anything, to address the congestion tax. Right here in Minnesota, a vice president of General Mills and this is a Minnesota company. They said, for every mile an hour that our vehicles are traveling under the posted speed limit, for every mile an hour, that costs us $1 million. For every mile that they're traveling under the posted speed limit, the vice president of General Mills says that costs them $1 million. Now, folks, we're taxing businesses already because of this congestion. And I would say that a tax on General Mills is a tax on Wheaties. It's a tax on, what else do they make? Well, you know what General Mills makes. Breakfast foods, mainly. They pass that along to our consumers. So, folks, let's try to at least address the congestion in the metropolitan area and move forward. What are we going to do? This bill proposes to spend over a 10-year period $8.315 billion on highways, on transitways, on our ports, waterways, airways, railways. $8.315 billion of investment. Now, the governor comes in with his bill at being $2.26 billion over that same period of time. Folks, we're clearly investing over $6 billion more than the governor. The governor's bill is basically a hold harmless bill. I believe in Minnesota we can do better. This bill is better. This bill is over $8 billion of investment. That means that we can go in greater Minnesota to those areas where we are still having fatalities and address that situation. We can still get 40 new troopers in the state patrol to help lower those speeds so that people don't die upon impact. Part of this proposal is also a 5% increase for the state patrol. That's so that they can catch up with the wages and be competitive as far as troopers go. And we can also retain those 80 positions that are due to retire. This means saving lives in Minnesota. We agree with the governor, and we adopted his proposal in that regard, and we pay for it in this bill. Once again, folks, in greater Minnesota, this bill means fewer deaths, more road construction. Clearly, six times more road construction than under the governor's proposal. Or I should say $6 billion more road construction than under the governor's proposal. And in the metropolitan area, it means that someday we will. Someday, not in 2030, but before 2030, we'll have a complete build-out of a transit system that will help reduce congestion. In our bill, we pay for that. In this conference committee report, we also pay for adding lane miles in the metropolitan area, which will help reduce congestion. Folks, this bill is good for the average taxpayer. It's good for Minnesota. It moves Minnesota businesses forward, and I would hope that everybody could vote for this bill. Now, folks, if you give me just a second here, I'll kind of walk through the bill, not like the bill I did the other day, but this bill is pretty, it's a standard transportation finance bill. You'll find in Article 1 a summary of all the spending that this bill does. These are investments that we need to make. There's a portion in here for transportation. It's broken down into aeronautical services, infrastructure and maintenance. It also talks about the state road construction, the highway debt service account, the county state aid roads, municipal state aid roads. We also have a provision in Article 1 that deals with the town road sign replacement program, and we do invest $2.5 million in that program. That will help put those township signs up in five counties in Minnesota. And it'll give us a good springboard to know how much we're going to have to invest to pick up the rest of the townships. There's also appropriation in here for the Met Council. That's broken down between bus, transit, rail operations. Starting on page 11 is the section 5 is the public safety portion of this bill. There's a lot of agreement between us and the governor's bill in this. The governor had asked for about $138,000 spread over 2 years for a security coordinator to help plan some of the events of the Republican National Convention that's going to be here. That's in the bill. There's also money in this bill for public safety officer survivor benefits. There's a couple of survivor benefit accounts in here that will help those families. And then there's also a provision for $500,000 for soft body armor reimbursement. This is one thing that the Senate has been adamant to try to do. We don't feel that officers in the state of Minnesota should have to reach into their own pocket to provide soft body armor. We figure soft body armor is the same thing as giving a law enforcement officer a gun. It should be standard issue. Under this proposal, it will make that a standard issue. There's also language continuing on page 13 that is some of the agreements with the governor's office, and these appropriations are all self-explanatory. You can read it. Page 14, there's an area in there where the state patrol is funded, and it also talks about commercial vehicle enforcement. Driver and vehicle services is also funded in this portion, and there's also a portion of the bill, folks, that move driver and vehicle services to a fee-based system so that we can get that off of the basically off the gas tax. Page 17, section 9, there's federal fund spending authority. We move on, and that's about the end of it for section 1, outside of a task force that was an advisory task force on future airport funding. This went through, I think this was Senator Rest's bill. It went through the appropriate committees, and it was all worked out, and the airports folks really appreciate this as part of the final package. Article 2 talks about trunk highway bonding. In this bill, we authorize $1.5 billion of trunk highway bonds. Section 3 talks about the financing of those bonds. Article 3 are the highway user taxes. This sets up a couple funds. Pretty much the same language that was in the bill as it went to conference committee. A lot of that deals with those transit assistant fund, or those transit assistant funds is what I should call it, and then also the Greater Minnesota Transit account and the Metropolitan Area Transit account. Members, on page 22, it starts talking about the increases that we are making on the tab fees. Let's see if I can. I listened to the debate in the other body, and they were terribly confused about this. So this is what the tab fee schedule is going to be in the future, and it says it right there between lines 21 and the end of the page. That's only if you buy a brand new car. If you buy a brand new car that was built and brought to Minnesota after the date, the effective date on this bill, you'll be put on the new schedule, which means for years 1, 2, and 3, you're going to pay more. We took the cap off. We're talking about people that are buying, $50,000 Lexus. They can afford to pay this. If you buy, so that's it. You have to buy an absolutely brand new car from the dealer to get thrown on the new schedule. Now, say 3 years from now, I buy a car from Senator Ortman, and it happens to be a 2008 vehicle. That car would then be put on the new schedule because that's where it started. Now, if I continue to drive my 97 Chevy pickup truck, I'm going to continue to pay the bottom amount, which is $25. Now, I, like Senator Langseth, like to drive things and operate them and see about how far we can get. And after about 280,000 miles on that truck, I might have to get one pretty soon. If I go out and buy a brand new vehicle, that's going to be put on the new schedule. But for folks, if you don't trade your vehicles or you don't buy one that's a 2008 model or newer, you got nothing to worry about. You're going to be on the old schedule, you're going to pay the old rate, and you're not going to see an increase. Pages 24, 25 start talking about the rate of gas tax increase. And folks, there's always that language like on 25, 14, line 14, 15, and 16 that talks about those specialized rates. But this is a 5 cent a gallon gas tax increase, and that is in the bill. Starting on starting on page 26, you'll find the language that deals with the new distribution of the CASA formula. Folks, and we've talked about that in this body before, it was a historic period of time when all 87 counties agreed that we needed to change this formula to get the money where it best represents the need. The new formula is basically 60-40. It was, like I said, all 87 counties adopted it. There was a little dissension in the beginning, but everybody came along. And once again, the CASA formula, this is what the counties want. We're trying to give them what they want. Article 4 starts talking about the county state aid highway fund distribution, the agreement that I just had talked about. Once again, folks, 40% of that new formula, as stated on page 34, goes towards registration, and 60% must be appropriated portion towards needs. Like I said, that's the agreement, and we're going to stick by it. Article 5 cleans up the language in regards to the Metropolitan County wheelage tax. What we've done here is we're only allowing the wheelage tax to continue in the 7-county metropolitan area. The offset is going to be off so that this is not going to be reflected on people's property taxes. This is kind of along the lines of pay-as-you-go. But we did allow those counties to either institute $5 or $10 county wheelage tax. Once again, that has to be voted on by county boards, and that's the way the county wheelage tax has always been done. Section 4 of this starts with the Metropolitan Transportation Sales and Use Tax. When I'm done here, I believe Senator Dibble is going to explain those sections in detail. Article 6 I spoke about earlier. This is the Department of Public Safety, Division of Vehicle Services. This moves them to a fee-based system, and this was language that was the governor's recommendation. Further back in the bill, there's, I don't want anybody kind of freaking out on page 46, but on line 2, there's a provision in there that allows the state patrol, it's called their escort service, it allows them to bump up their hourly rate. The state patrol needs this to continue, it's kind of a, once again, a fee base. They don't want to charge more than what it actually takes to provide this service, but they don't want to charge less either. So this kind of brings into compliance what the it reflects what the true cost actually is. Article 7 starts talking about other transportation activities. There's a lot of this stems from a proposal that Senator Latz had. We talked about that before, but that's basically where if somebody gets a DWI and they're low income, we allow them to split the payments up so that they can make it and, you know, get their license back and get back to work. And Senator Fischbach has been wholeheartedly supportive of that provision. Members, and then it goes on to talk in Section 4 of the transportation funding. And members, I just want to note that all 10 of the conference committee members signed that, and we all work together as a team. You know, I appreciate the we even had a Republican member from the House, Representative Peterson, come to all the meetings. Was very interested, voted for the bill today, and gave us some parting words of wisdom that I wish I would have wrote down, because it was a very unique poem that he wrote, and it was really good. And basically the gist of it was, we're going to move Minnesota forward now. And with that, Mr. President, I'd like to yield to Senator Dibble.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just very quickly, I want to thank Senator Murphy, thank the members of the Conference Committee, and all of those members of the entire Transportation Committee and the Transit Subcommittee who have worked very, very hard this year and in the interim, setting the stage and really engaging in an extremely thoughtful and very meaningful larger public discussion about what we need to do on transportation and transit and really get Minnesota moving forward. This is just so key, so crucial to establishing what we need to do to build the economic future and vitality of Minnesota. Transportation truly is one of those investments that will move our economy forward, move the ability for many, many businesses and families in our communities to thrive and to succeed. And this is an amazing bill. It's an opportunity we haven't had for many, many, many years. And so it's very exciting. It could be potentially historic if this were to pass into law. It's something we've been striving for quite some time, and it would put us in league with all the other metropolitan areas in the states around the country with whom we compete for jobs, for employees, for vitality and quality of life. Very quickly, Senator Murphy asked me to explain the Metropolitan Transportation Sales and Use Tax section of the bill. That's on page 37. You can read through it very quickly. The bill going on the way out had very specific provisions. It imposed a joint powers agreement in the seven-county metropolitan area, called that out specifically, who was to be on that joint powers agreement. It imposed the sales tax as a state function and set up the terms of representation and participation on that joint powers board. The bill, as it has returned, it does establish a metropolitan transportation area. It names the seven counties of the metropolitan area, says that they can become a part of that by resolution of their county boards. Additionally, it allows counties that are adjacent to any county that's a part of the metropolitan area, transportation area, can become a part of the fuller area as a function of resolution by their board. Each of the counties then imposes the tax under the auspices of that joint powers board. So they impose the tax individually. It does not require a referendum because it's subject to the special law section of statute. When one or more governments have a population of a million or more people, it's considered a special law. And in particular, this applies because, of course, this is a matter of state policy, of state interest. Collecting a tax that has a statewide implication and ramification, I think it's perhaps similar to some of the rationale that went into the Hennepin County sales tax imposition from last year that we had so much discussion about. It calls for the Joint Powers Board to establish its own representatives. Each county board would send a member to be a part of the Joint Powers. cities would participate in the form of a technical advisory committee to help establish the priorities and the types of projects that would be funded through this source. And this is intended to fund transit, it's intended to fund roads, you know, regional corridors of regional significance in the metropolitan area and beyond if other counties append onto this organization. And the mix, the split would be about 50% for transit, we're envisioning about 25% for roads, and then there'd be 25 set aside that would be a flexible fund. So as needs change, as priorities vary, as various counties that need a different mix of dollars participate in that conversation, there's that level of flexibility. It allows for some of the dollars to be spent for pedestrian and bikeway facilities, and it asks that almost $19 million of the revenue be just taken off the top and devoted to metropolitan transit for purposes of transit operations. And that's to recognize that these dollars are also intended to participate in operating our transit system and our bus system. And that, in general terms, are the provisions of the metropolitan area sales tax. It does allow for greater Minnesota counties on their own initiative to impose a half-cent sales tax. That wouldn't be subject to the special laws provision. That would have to be subject to a referendum because it doesn't meet that million population threshold. However, those dollars could be imposed and collected for the purpose of transit or transportation purposes generally. Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. President.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, when I was speaking of General Mills earlier, I misspoke. And I've got the paper here in front of me now. The Vice President for General Mills, Tim Coates, stated that for every 1 mile per hour drop in the speed for their fleet below the posted limits, General Mills loses $2 million. So it wasn't $1 million that they're losing, it's $2 million. He also goes on and says they generally agree that the investment should be as transparent as possible to transportation users. He interpreted that to mean things like the fuel tax should carry as much as a burden for financing roads versus things like property tax, which is basically... which is where the financing shift has been occurring in Minnesota. He also said one could easily conclude that it looks like we are positioning ourselves to be less economically competitive for the future because of this push towards funding roads with property tax. Members, that's the bill. I'll stand for questions.
Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, all I'll say is this, and this is a true story. My legislative assistant was sitting next to me when the phone rang, and I picked it up, and a constituent of mine from Stillwater said, it looks like you are raising every tax there is. What's the matter with you? I'm just a consumer out here, but we are not a bottomless pit, you know. And I'll leave it at that, members. This is raising every tax we know in the area of transportation.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Vandeveer, this is, we did some runs on what this would cost, especially a family in the metropolitan area like in your district. This is a family that has three cars and purchasing one new car. So that one new car would go on the new schedule. Their total cost, $256 a year. That's it. It's not $500. It's $256 a year. These are verified numbers done by the actual people who do the runs first here in the Senate. $256. All right. Now, in the next year, let's just say the wheelage tax is still in play and that new vehicle is still on the on the rolls. And, well, in the next year, that would be around $300, Senator Vandeveer. And we already heard from the United States Secretary of Transportation that in Minnesota, the average family pays $1,500 a year in congestion tax. Now, Senator Vandeveer, you can talk about your constituent that might have been angry, but this is what he would get for his $256 a year investment. Now, this is a list, and on the front are the governor's objectives that his bill would pay for, and then on the back are all the projects, and we took the governor's list. We took these lists right out of the Department of Transportation. We started at the top and went right down as far as the money would go. And Senator Vandeveer, in the governor's proposal, there seems to be a, when talking about the St. Croix River crossing, that's not in his proposal, but that $484 million bridge over into God's country that we've talked about numerous times, it would be able to be paid for by this conference committee report. As a matter of fact, folks, there's $5.7 billion of investment that is in this bill that is not in the governor's bill.
Senator Vandeveer.
Would Senator Murphy yield for a question?
Senator Vandeveer.
Mr. President, Senator Murphy, did your estimate include the so-called local option sales tax or the one that's about the half-cent sales tax, the income tax that we had here that was passed out of the Senate? Does it include the deed tax that I believe passed out? Are these taxes all included in that $235?
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator, no, they're not. We're talking about transportation here, and the overall cost for a family in the metropolitan area that has three vehicles, one of them brand new, $256 a year.
So, Mr. President and members, if you buy a new car, whether it's a Lexus or a Chevy, it's you're going to be paying the higher license tax. This does not include the new local sales tax that I believe this authorizes. So it is not $200 and some. It's probably three or four times that.
Mr. President, Murphy. Senator Vandeveer, I'm sorry I didn't answer that second question that you had in there. Yes, this includes, that $256 includes the additional sales tax that would be paid by this family, and that would be about $70 a year. And so once again, that first year, it's $256 per family in the metropolitan area that has three vehicles per year. That's not even a cup of coffee a day.
Senator Neville.
Mr. President, I have a couple of technical questions for either Senator Dibble or Murphy, if they would yield. My first one is, I represent three counties that are adjacent to the seven-county metro and Scott County, which is in. Under this bill, they can choose to opt in to this joint powers board. I'm not sure if they would or not, but they have the right. They also have the right, being greater Minnesota counties, to have a half-cent sales tax for transportation just for themselves, subject to a referendum. So my first question is, can they do both?
Senator Neville will get the answer to that. I'm not sure of the answer. You know, the intent is for them to not to, but we have someone checking that out for you.
I think
trying to get the answer for you, Senator.
Okay.
Neville, I believe.
I might need Senate Counsel's help on the second question, too. Under this Metro Joint Powers Board, it's my understanding that the language doesn't require all seven counties to sign up. If just Scott and Dakota wanted to have their own Joint Powers Board, they could. Or if just Dakota and Rice County, which is out of the seven-county metro, but chose to opt, could they opt in just with Dakota? Or could Le Sueur opt in just with Scott?
Senator Dipple.
If I understand the question, is the question, can there be more than one metropolitan area transportation? Metropolitan transportation.
The question
area?
Is
Senator Neville, you need to,
I'm sorry,
to be
Madam,
recognized.
Madam President and Senator Dipple, the question is how many different combinations of joint powers boards could we have within this new authority creating the Metropolitan Joint Powers Board language in the bill?
Senator Dipple, you yield for that question?
Thank you, Madam President. Yes. Just one, Senator Neville.
Okay.
Senator Neville.
So, Madam Chair, the intent then in the language
Senator
that's in this
Neville,
bill.
Senator Neville, you're asking Senator Dipple to continue to yield.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yield.
Yes, I am.
And Senator Dipple, do you yield?
Yes, Madam President.
Senator Neville.
Okay, so I'm sorry for the protocol. Madam President and Senator Dipple, so the only way this Joint Powers Board can be created is if all of the counties of the seven-county metro area agree to create it? In other words, if there's one county that doesn't, it can't be created?
Senator Dipple.
No, Senator Neville, it can be a subset of the seven counties. So it's up to seven counties, and then, of course, any county that's adjacent to the established metropolitan transportation area.
So,
Senator Neville.
Madam President, and if Senator, if I could have a continuing request to yield.
Senator Dipple, will you yield to a series of questions?
Yes, Madam President, I will yield for the duration.
Okay.
Senator Dipple. Senator Neville.
Madam Chair and Senator Dipple, so could Scott County all by itself decide to create a joint powers board and include their cities and townships and create their own board, have their own half-cent sales tax without a referendum, and keep the money that they raise just within Scott County?
Senator Dipple.
Thank you. It is conceivable, although I don't think you could have, perhaps it's conceivable technically that Scott County could do that under the provisions of this. However, I don't think then that, you know, a county across the metro area could set up a separate metropolitan transportation area. It would have to become a part of. And it's important to know that all seven of these metropolitan counties have indicated quite clearly in form of resolution and communication that it is their intention to participate in this, establish the metropolitan transportation area, and become a part of this joint powers board.
Okay. Well, Madam President and members, I wasn't aware that they had already pre-indicated that, but mostly I was trying to create a record of what the intent of this all was, because when it was explained to us in our summaries, there was some confusion or ambiguity with the language itself. And as I understand it, this board is going to be comprised, I mean, the members of the Joint Powers Board will be weighted somehow so that there'll be more votes with Hennepin County, Ramsey County, and Anoka than there might be for Dakota or Scott. And it's not, I mean, nobody from Scott County, even though I represent a small piece of it, has told me that they would want to join into this. Maybe somebody else from Scott County who has talked to the Scott County Board, or somebody from Dakota, could comment if they have been told by their county boards that they would definitely participate in this metro-wide board. But I would have some questions about why would I want my citizens to have a half-cent sales tax on them? And if I'm representing Belle Plaine at the very southern end of Scott County, why would I do that when there could be very little benefit actually getting down to that area, and the Joint Powers Board is weighted against Scott County? It's going to be dominated by Hennepin County or Ramsey or Anoka County. So I'm a little concerned about that, and I wanted to try to find out just how many ways can this language be interpreted. And if somebody else could clarify that on the record, I'd appreciate it.
Senator Dibble.
Madam President, I can assure Senator Neville that representatives of all of the counties have participated in this negotiation and discussion, and they support the language. As a matter of fact, did a great deal to craft the language that you see before you. Additionally, the factor of waiting is again, if you recall, in the bill as it was proposed on the way out of here to conference committee, was very, very specific in how we determined the relative weighting. Now we leave it up to the joint powers themselves, the members of the counties themselves, to figure out if that even makes sense at all. And if it does, they can make provisions for weighted voting or not. So a lot is left to the counties. And so if Scott County or Carver County or another is uncomfortable with the relative benefit that they're going to get, they can choose to not participate. However, I think that they've all indicated that there's a great deal of regard and trust among all the parties who have been at the table. They've hashed through a lot of these issues, and I think they're comfortable. They're very comfortable proceeding under this scenario.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam President. I have been lobbied extensively by my city councils asking for this bill. And one of the things that people should remember about this bill is this is a compromise. This is a different bill than left the Senate floor. When our bill left the Senate floor, the half-cent sales tax was swayed very heavily towards transit. And some of our suburban areas, while in fact I would have much preferred that, our suburban areas felt it was very important that we leave that flexible because they wanted to use part of their half-cent sales tax for these road needs that have been built up over time. And so in every single area of this bill, we did reach compromise. We started out, as you all know, with a 10-cent gas tax. Now we're at a 5. We started out with us imposing a sales tax. We're now leaving it up to those counties to impose the sales tax. We started out with saying 60 or 75% for transit. Now we're saying 50% for transit. I think that this is one bill where we did have everybody in a bipartisan way come to the table and say, what are people concerned about? What are people saying? And this bill is in response to that. You know, we argue here about whether this tax is good, that tax is good, and my message has been clearly all session that we ought to be talking about what is needed to move Minnesota forward. And I think we would all agree that we have tremendous needs in the transportation area and that we are not getting our job this session done unless we address those needs. And to let this opportunity go by the first time in, I understand, 20 years that there's been a resolution on the Conference Committee for Transportation, we have come together on a bill. This is an opportunity. And I think that we would be showing the people of Minnesota that we were keeping our promise. We said we were going to be different this year, that we were going to come together, we were going to compromise, we were going to listen to what they said. Sometimes people have said, oh, did you campaign on raising taxes? I didn't. Well, I did campaign on raising taxes. I knocked on every door and said, I'm going to support a transportation bill that will have a gas tax increase and that will do something for transit. And I put pictures of trains on my brochures. I put pictures of the route that people could expect to see if, in fact, we were in the majority and if, in fact, the people voted for a strong transportation bill. In debates, talked about the importance of putting money towards these areas. And the people voted for me. So I would have to say that the people do want this and that we ought to listen to them. And this is one way that we can come together. I was very hopeful to see the House, 91 members voted for the transportation bill in the House. I think this is a reflection of people's commitment to move Minnesota forward and passing a transportation bill. For those of you who don't know, my campaign slogan was Uniting the Middle. And Uniting the Middle is really about uniting the people to move Minnesota forward, to take our eyes off these divides and do what we need to do for the state of Minnesota. So I hope you will support this bill. And I also want to take a minute to acknowledge our chairperson, Senator Murphy, and Senator Dibble for the strong work they did to make this bill happen, and the staff as well. Thank you.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. I also am confused about the operation of this language for the Joint Powers Board, and I'm hoping that Senator Dibble would give me the courtesy of yielding to my questions as well.
Senator Dibble, will you yield to some questions from Senator Ortman?
Thank you, Madam President. As long as Senator Ortman gives me a chance to answer an earlier question of Senator Neville's, I do have an answer now. So.
Senator Ortman.
Madam President, maybe now would be a good time for that, and then if there's still a remaining question, then I can offer it at that time.
So I'm going to call on Senator Dibble, and then I will revert to Senator Ortman if need be. Senator Dibble.
Thank you. And just to respond to the first question that Senator Neville asked, and I knew the answer to this, but I had just forgotten it, and I was reminded. It was pointed out to me. So the first question was whether a county outside of the metropolitan area could impose both the half-cent sales tax that would make it a part of the metropolitan transportation area and its own half-cent sales tax as called for under the Greater Minnesota Transportation Sales and Use Tax, Section 5 on page 40. The short answer to that question is no, it cannot. It can't double dip. The language can be found on page 40, line 21. It says that the county has to be outside the metropolitan transportation area in order to impose that independent half-cent sales tax.
Is there further discussion? Chair recognizes Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. If Senator Dibble would yield.
Senator Dibble yields.
Senator Dibble, is there anything in the bill that would restrict a county from being part of more than one joint powers board for imposing taxes, and could it be a joint powers board all by itself? And is there any reason why it couldn't impose more than one tax, be a joint powers board on its own, and then also join with a fellow county, maybe even a non-contiguous county, and create a joint powers board?
Senator Dibble.
Madam President, the answer to that question is no. This bill does not envision more than one joint powers agreement in the metropolitan area for the purpose of establishing this particular sales tax. And then as I pointed out earlier, if a county in Greater Minnesota decided to impose, or a county outside of the metropolitan transportation area chose to establish that half-cent sales tax for itself, it could not then be also part of the metropolitan area joint powers agreement. So the short answer is no.
Senator Ortman.
Madam President, I'm wondering if Senator Dibble could point to the language in the bill that restricts a county to a maximum of one-half percent and also restricts them to one joint powers agreement, and where that joint powers agreement must have at least more than their own county.
Senator Dibble.
Well, thank you, Madam President. Well, I think a clear reading of the bill itself, starting on page 37, that establishes the metropolitan transportation area. Calls simply for the single metropolitan transportation area that counties by resolution can become a part of, and then under the auspices of that metropolitan transportation area enacts the half-cent sales tax that then's pooled, and those monies are remitted to that joint powers for the purposes that are described later on page 39. And then if you go on to see that on page 40, the Greater Minnesota Transportation Area Sales and Use Tax, as I cited earlier, it says the board of a county outside the metropolitan transportation area. So that's the key language, outside the transportation area. In either one county acting under or more acting under joint powers agreement may impose the half-cent sales tax for transportation purposes generally. So I think the restrictive language, the key restrictive language is on line 21 on page 40.
Senator Ortman.
Madam President, that section, it looks like, applies to the greater Minnesota transportation sales and use tax, but I'm talking about metropolitan counties. Couldn't, in theory, a metropolitan county like Carver County, and I know they have expressed no interest in this provision whatsoever, but theoretically, couldn't one county commissioner who's appointed for this purpose basically adopt a joint powers agreement by him or herself and impose a tax on Carver County residents and then also join a joint powers agreement with some other county within the metropolitan area and impose another tax?
Senator Ortman, is that an additional question for Senator Dibble?
Madam President, for Senator Dibble or counsel, whoever might answer the question, I think it does make the point here that perhaps this provision is premature and there are all kinds of legal issues and questions that arise from just a regular reading of this bill. I don't think it takes an enterprising lawyer, but I think there will be many who can make a case for some very confusing results under this provision.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I disagree. Clearly, the bill calls for the establishment of one joint powers board in the metropolitan area. That is a clear reading of the language of the bill, and that's certainly the legislative intent, as was discussed throughout the entire development of this section of the bill. An enterprising lawyer probably wouldn't have a very good case if they were to take that idea to court. Furthermore, I'll say that all of the counties have indicated their desire and their willingness to participate in this solitary joint powers arrangement within the metropolitan area for the purpose as described in the bill. If you look at subdivision 4 on page 38, starting on line 10, the joint powers board must consist of one or more representatives of each county that is in the metropolitan transportation area appointed by its county board. The joint powers board has the powers and duties provided in this section and in section 471.59. Clearly, we're talking about a single joint powers board. So that's the goal. I think we're getting hung up on some issues and some ideas that may be quite minor and technical in nature, but they just don't bear out upon reading of the language. This is certainly how many other metropolitan areas have proceeded by establishing the half-cent sales tax in their metropolitan area for the purpose of transit and transportation purposes. This is just an attempt to join the leagues of those other areas across the entire country that have done this. I think we're about the only metropolitan area of our size, larger, or even smaller, that haven't gone this route.
Further discussion, Senator Ortman.
Madam President, with all due respect to Senator Dibble, I think that we should be given at least a line here that shows us exactly what he's saying, because I've read this bill. I know Senator Neville has read it as well. Senate counsel has looked at it, and it does not clearly state that there are limits to the use of this joint powers authority. And in that sense, this bill creates more authority than Minnesota taxpayers can afford. And truly, Madam President, this section aside, even if you were okay with this section, which raises all kinds of legal questions and all kinds of gray areas for Minnesota taxpayers, look at the overall bill. The overall bill is too thick. There's too much authority here. And I would ask Minnesota senators to ask themselves the question, how much vision can we afford? How much vision can Minnesota taxpayers afford? When I went to buy gas this weekend, it was $3.16 a gallon. Now we're going to impose a sales tax on gas. And remember, who pays the sales tax on gas and everything else, including the metro area sales tax, if we raise that too? Who pays the taxes? The poorest of the poor pay the sales taxes. This is a very regressive tax. It is not progressive by any means. And what that means, if people are watching here, is that people on fixed incomes, people with no income, still must pay these taxes if they want to pay for gas. Or if they want to pay for things in their stores, they pay the sales tax that is being proposed in this provision. We've already seen all kinds of proposals for sales tax coming out of the legislature. It's too much, simply. And, Madam President, I, for one, think that Minnesota can't afford all the vision in this bill.
Is there further discussion?
Well, Mr. Madam Chair,
Senator Murphy,
I need to correct Senator Ortman. She said that this imposes a sales tax on gasoline. That's not true. The state of Minnesota does not impose a sales tax on their gasoline. The state of Illinois does. They also have a gas tax that's more than 20 cents a gallon and a 6.5 sales tax. And if you go down to Illinois, you'll see that their roads are in better shape than ours. If you drive into Wisconsin, where their gas tax is about 11 and a half cents a gallon more than it is here, you'll see that even their town roads are paved. Over here on this side of the creek, we're lucky to have gravel township roads. I've even seen some that they just throw up the sign and say, well, it's going to be a minimum maintenance road, and then it just turns to dirt, which we all know in the spring is mud. So we've got a lot of needs over here. And once again, folks, and people are trying to say that this is going to cost you an arm and a leg and maybe two legs. It's just simply not true. The total price, $256 per family that has three vehicles, one of which is brand new that goes on the new tab fee schedule, $256. And in regards to the language that's in the bill, you know, we can talk all these hypotheticals, Madam Chairman. The deal is that these seven counties in the metropolitan area are starving for money to spend on transportation, whether it's roads, bridges, rail service, or commuter rail, or high-speed rail. They're clamoring to get to the trough because they know that it means so much. Once again, average family, three vehicles, $256 in this bill. The price of congestion by the Republican Secretary of Transportation, the United States Transportation Secretary, says that in our metropolitan area, $1,500 is the average per family of cost that the congestion is taxing our residents. So this is a $256 a year investment so that we don't have to pay that other $1,500.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm wondering if Senator Dibble would yield again. Senator Dibble,
you yield? He yields. Senator Roebling.
I am also concerned about the joint powers agreement issue in here, because I'm from a county that is interested in talking about the half-cent sales tax, but they have not committed to that. And I was very interested in Senator Neville's questions, because when I first read the bill, I too thought that several counties like Carver and Scott could form a joint powers agreement together. But you're saying there would be one group that would form that agreement. How long would any one county have to decide to come into that agreement? Would they be able to wait a couple of years to decide? Or if they did that, would they be excluded? I'm curious, because right now in the Metropolitan Council's long-range transit plans, we do not have any rail lines or anything like that coming out to Scott County. And so I'm thinking that until we would have some kind of a promise that something would come our way, our commissioners aren't going to be very likely to support a half-cent sales tax, because they would see no direct benefit from it. And so I'm just wondering what the sequence of events would be here, so that I'm trying to assure that my constituents wouldn't be paying for something in the long term that they would not be receiving any direct benefits for.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I will call Senator Roebling's. First, I should back up one step and let Senator Roebling know that we have a strong indication, not a strong indication, we've been told forthrightly that members of the Carver County Board of Commissioners do want to participate in this metropolitan transportation area and want to impose the sales tax. And they're more comfortable, even more so now, they were before, but even more so now under the language that we're proposing in this conference committee report. They were a party to the negotiation that arrived at the language that we have before you, and they understand the benefit to their own constituents, because certainly most commuters that come from those western metro counties, Scott, Carver, they commute into, you know, further, more deeply into the metropolitan area. Half of those come to Hennepin County. So they see the benefits of participating regionally in transit, participating regionally in those transportation corridors. So they're great users of the entire transportation system, including transit, and would like to participate in that and know that their constituents will benefit. But if you look at page 38, the Joint Powers Agreement, it says quite clearly and specifically that that the Joint Powers Agreement is subject to negotiation. It provides for folks, for counties to opt in at the time, under timeline under which they're comfortable, so they can come in at a later date as well. They can get out at some point if they feel like they're not benefiting. And then there was the discussion earlier about the weight-based voting system. It says it may provide for a weight-based voting system for those joint power boards' decision. So there's plenty of comfort, plenty of allowance for counties to come in on their own timeline, to leave when it suits them. So they have a lot of flexibility in their participation in the joint powers board.
Is there further discussion on House File 946? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Murphy yield for just a couple questions?
Senator Murphy, do you yield? He does.
Senator Murphy, I am. I may be the last person in the chamber that's understanding this, but a couple of years ago, and I wasn't here, but Governor Ventura and so on did something with the tab fees and brought them way down. And it seems to me, I remember at the time that a new car could well be in the $300 to $500 range at that time. And maybe I'm wrong for tab. $600, okay. $700, all right. Can you maybe just expound maybe once more on the tab fee provision in this and what might happen over and against the schedule that we have right now?
Senator Murphy.
Yes, Senator Senjum, and not a problem. Pre-change to the Ventura, of the Ventura administration, we had a fairly, in my opinion, regressive tab fee schedule, where a lot of high-valued vehicles, they were paying $600-$700, but that was only for the first 2 years, and then it depreciated. What we're doing is we're trying to capture about half of the change. Before we were up here, now we're down here. We're trying to move that fee schedule someplace in the middle. But it's important to note that if you own today a vehicle that you've bought and paid for before this bill becomes enacted, that is going to stay on the old schedule, and you're not going to see any increase at all. Even if you buy a 19, or I'm still living in the 1990s. If you buy a 2007 vehicle today, for example, Senator Senjum, say you go out and buy a Chevy, 2002 Caprice Chevy, or I said 2007. I'm still a couple years back, but anyway, that would not go up. You'd be put on the old schedule, and it would continue to depreciate until after year 10. You would be paying $25, the same as I pay on my 97 Chevy pickup truck, okay? Now, if you were to buy a 2008 vehicle, you would be put, and this bill became law, you would be put on the new schedule. The cap is taken off. So, in other words, you would pay the full value of that fee for that first year. And then if you look in the bill, and if you hold on just a second, I can get you exactly what it says. It's like Jeopardy. Okay, Senator St. Jim, here's what it would be. On the first year, you would pay 100% of the base value, okay? The second year, it would be 80. For the third year, it would be 70. The fourth year, 60. The fifth year, 50%. The sixth year, 40%. The seventh, 35%. The eighth year would be 30. So there's actually some reduction once this goes out for a ways, Senator St. Jim. Say you buy that 2008 and you keep it for until 2020, say. By the time you get to the end, you're going to be paying less than if you had a 2007 vehicle because the depreciation drops off so much faster once that vehicle gets out past 5 years. But initially, on a brand new vehicle, you're going to pay more, and in some cases, that's going to be $100 more. In some cases, it's going to be $200 more. But it depends on the value of the vehicle. So if you buy a high value, say a $65,000 Cadillac Escalade, you're going to pay about half of what you would have paid pre-Ventura, okay? But you're going to pay considerably more than you would today. But if you buy a brand new 2008 Yugo that has a lower sticker price, you're going to pay a little bit more, but by the time that car depreciates in year 2, 3, 4, 5, it's going to be less. So it's a little bit more for some, it's a little bit less for others, but it puts more, overall, it puts about $1 billion into the transportation fund over a 10-year period. And that's what we tried to do so that we didn't have to raise the gas tax because, Madam Chair and Senator St. Jim, if we were talking about just raising the gas tax to pay solely for transportation, we would be talking about a doubling or a tripling of the gas tax, and we can't do that. I mean, I wouldn't even vote for that. And I ran around and told everybody I was going to increase the price of the gas tax. So we tried to spread it out a little bit over all these different funding mechanisms so that we didn't have to rely entirely on one. I mean, we pick up, you know, in this bill, and I could run through the numbers again, but off the top of my head, you know, there's about $1 billion in gas tax, $1 billion in bonding, $1 billion under this provision, and then somewhat less under some of the others, but we tried to smooth it all out. This is investment that needs to happen. And, you know, and Senator St. Jim, down in our district, we're both blessed and cursed. We had one of the most successful building projects of any design, build, construction that has went on any place in the United States, and that was the Rock 52 project. But this is what it means for us, Senator St. Jim. We passed out all those little maps with the red lines on them. In District 6, if you look at that and you add up all the lane miles and then look at what is the remaining service life in District 6, 80% of the roads in our district, Senator St. Jim, these are the roads that you and I drive on every day, are going to need to be replaced before 3 years. Now, I don't know where we're going to come up with that money because right now we don't have it. I mean, we absolutely don't have it. And Senator St. Jim, and you know, if you just kind of look at the area that you represent, you know, around the Rochester area, most of those roads going in and out of the Rochester area aren't too bad except for, you know, Highway 14. And we all know that that needs investment. That's one of the most deadly roads in the whole entire United States. I don't think that that's what we want. I know it's not what you want. It's not what I want. But you look in Olmsted County, and, you know, you're basically 4 for 6. 4 of your roads out of the 6 are in pretty good shape. But then if you go over here to Dodge County, and I think that you share a sliver of Dodge with Senator Day and maybe a couple other folks, but over in Dodge County, you're 0.5 for six. I mean, you're not even one for six. You're one half for six roads. Out of the six roads there, there's only half of one of those roads that's not going to need to be replaced in the next 3 years. And I would say, and if you look up further on Highway 57 coming out of Wanamingo and Highway 56 coming out of Kenyon, and then there's 60 going across, most of that's in my district. And, you know, there are red lines here, and, you know, that means it's a poor index, and it needs to be replaced in 0 to 3 years. Those three roads should have been replaced probably 10 years ago. But we didn't have any money, but we did fix the Rock 52 project. But as you can see in District 6, any time anymore that you do these big projects, it sucks up all the money from the district and plops it down in one area. Now, we were fortunate to get that done, and it needs to be done. And I wasn't going to complain about maybe a couple of the roads in the areas that I represent that are going to have to be backed up off the schedule. And right now we don't have money to fix those roads. We don't have money to fix a lot of those red roads down in our district, Senator St. John. This bill will provide that. This bill will provide that. And, you know, Senator St. John, these are big numbers. And I'm just going to give you two. And this is the this is finishing up the construction on Highway 52 from Rochester to 494. That cost is $286 million. That's paid for in this bill. That will get done. So when we talk about Highway 14, that section from New Ulm, I believe that's over there in Senator Fredrickson's neck of the woods. From New Ulm to Rochester, that's $600 million. And that would be a wise investment for $600 million because Highway 14 is one of the most dangerous highways in the entire United States. Bar none, it is. So if you live along Highway 14, this conference committee report, and I can guarantee it because we took these projects right down the list that of MnDOT's priority, this bill will completely reconstruct Highway 14. This bill will. On the governor's bill, Senator St. John, Highway 14, there's little bits and pieces of it here and there that are on the list, but it's $600 million worth of investment, and that's not in the governor's bill. It's in this bill that we have an opportunity to vote for today.
Mr. President.
Senator St. John.
Mr. President.
Senator St. John.
May I just quickly follow up, Senator Murphy? And going back to my question about tab fees, and I think you used the word base value, that the tab fee at least initially is based on a base value, and I suppose that's the car. But is that base value then, let's just say $30,000 car, new car. Is the tab fee then a percent of say that $30,000 on a 2008 car? Is that the way this works?
Well, Senator Murphy.
Senator Murphy, you were referencing the schedule and the tab fees as relating to a base value. I think the words you were. And I wish I could answer the question myself. I just can't find it in the bill. But is that base value then based on a percentage of the price of the car?
Senator Murphy.
Talking new car.
Madam Chair and Senator St. John, under current law, which is on page 22, starting on line 11, Senator St. John, it says that the register shall establish the base value, not the vase value, the base value, when new of every passenger, automobile, and hearse. Senator Coring, every hearse registered prior to the effective date of the extra session laws back in 1971. So the department takes and establishes that base. Once that base is established, that vehicle is put on the schedule. And as the car gets older, and then down on lines 21, you can see as the car gets older, it starts depreciating in value, and that depreciation schedule is in the bill there, Senator St. John.
Mr. President.
Is there further discussion? Senator Langseth.
Mr. President, members of the Senate, I was chairman of the Transportation Committee for 14 years. I was chairman also of a Transportation Study Board for 2.5 years. This bill is long overdue. We are just hurting our system terribly by going on and on and not getting anything done. There's very good funding in this bill for rural Minnesota. There's very necessary funding for metropolitan Minnesota. One thing I found out in the 2.5 years that we studied the system was that this metropolitan area in the future simply would not function unless we put more money into mass transit and light rail. We simply can't do it with lanes alone, and they're way, way too expensive. Sure, this is a fairly rich bill, but not as much as is really needed. But, you know, we always used to pass these bills in a bipartisan fashion many years ago. I think we got to get back on that, and I would urge everyone, regardless of what they've been told to do, to vote for this bill. It's good for rural Minnesota. It's good for metropolitan Minnesota.
Senator Youngbauer.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Murphy yield?
Senator Murphy, do you yield? He yields. Senator Youngbauer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Murphy, you know, looking at the bill, I think you've made some good arguments as to why we need this kind of investment, as to why we may need to increase fees or taxes. But I guess as we look at this, the rub for some of us becomes what is most important to Minnesota. Now, we know what's in the Constitution. It tells us we have, you know, public safety, transportation, and public education. So, Senator Murphy, on that global scale, to give us all a little help and a little impetus in knowing whether or not to vote for this bill, would you say that this bill would rise to being the most important bill that affects all Minnesotans?
Senator Murphy.
Well, Madam Chair, as the chair of the Transportation Committee, obviously my bias is slanted towards transportation. But Senator Jungbauer, I can say this with perfect clarity. This bill is much more important than the sales taxes that we voted to raise for ducks, geese, fish, and paintings. I believe that this bill is going to move Minnesota forward. And we heard from the CEO, or I should say the Vice President, General Mills, about what it cost that one company alone. We also heard from United Parcel Service, from their CEO, of what it cost that company alone, right here in Minnesota. If they could move their goods and services to and fro without spending another $2 million in General Mills' case for every mile an hour that they have to drive under the speed limit, that's $2 million of investment that they can make in their own infrastructure and hire guys like me and you, Senator Jungbauer.
Senator Youngbauer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Murphy, what I'm wondering then, Senator Murphy, is if some of us in a bipartisan fashion are given to vote for the bill along with you, if we could count on you to advocate to the rest of your caucus that this might be the only increase we need this year if we would pick one, because that would make a big difference to myself and other members of our caucus, Senator Murphy.
Is there further discussion on House File 946? Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. I have to go back to a comment made by Senator Murphy. When you add 5 cents to the gas, to the price of gas, it's a tax. You can call it a sales tax, you can call it a gas tax, but it's a tax. And given the price at the pump, $3.16 I paid this weekend, if you add in the 5 cents we're going to tax plus the surcharge, you're going to add 7.5 cents to the price of gas with the passage of this bill. You can call it whatever you want, but it's going to hurt Minnesotans in their pocketbook, to be sure. I want to clarify something, I think, and make a point that's very important for people that might be watching this debate. We had a constitutional question on our ballot last year, and we asked Minnesotans, did they want to dedicate money from MVEST, the Motor Vehicle Excise Sales Tax, to put more money into our transportation funding? And they clearly said yes. And so we have more funding for transportation in that fashion. It'll take us a few years to phase it in. But by the time we're done in 4 years, we will have put $256 million every year into transportation, annually increasing our transportation budget by $250 million every year. What the voters did not say, Madam President, is equally important in this debate. They did not say, members of the Minnesota Senate and House, please raise my taxes more than that. They didn't say, please raise the gas tax. They didn't say, please raise another sales tax. They said, no, our priority is please take the money we are already paying for our motor vehicle excise sales tax and spend it on the things we really want you to spend it on, which is transportation. And we're doing that. We don't need to go overboard and raise all these taxes. We should have listened to the voters. They said, please dedicate the motor vehicle excise sales tax. That would have been enough. We could have taken this incrementally, but instead we went overboard and passed all these extra taxes, and it will hurt Minnesota, it will hurt our economy, and it will hurt Minnesota families.
Any further discussion? Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, Senator Ortman, I can say this to your no new taxes speech. You've been consistent because you voted against the twins. You voted against that amendment the other day.
Point of order, Madam President. This should not be personal.
Senator Murphy.
Madam Chair, I wasn't being personal. That's public record. I thought we could mention that here on the floor of the Senate.
Senator Murphy, just watch your language.
Well, I didn't. Madam Chair, I don't think that I was using anything that you can't find in the cleaned-up, abridged version of Webster's Dictionary.
Oh, I didn't mean that, Senator Murphy. I meant I think Senator Ortman was taking issue with your making the debate personal.
Madam Chairman, I can tell you what is personal. This is what's personal for me, members. Is having a transportation bill that moves Minnesota forward economically and stops the carnage on Minnesota roads. Now, folks, I've been to several funerals, several in the past 3 years, where friends of mine lost their kids because the roads are in such terrible shape in this state. Is it personal? You bet it is. And I think it should be personal for everyone in here. Anybody that lives on the Highway 14 corridor, they should be investing in Minnesota. They should vote yes for this bill. Anybody that lives on the Highway 52 corridor in our neck of the woods, they should be voting yes because it is personal. People have died on that road, and several of them are from families that I know. Senator Sinjum, I'm sure that you can say the same thing. So should it be personal? Yes, it should be. We all are invested in the state of Minnesota, and the state of Minnesota is its people. That's what this is about. This is about jobs. Every state in the nation that has made a major investment of this magnitude in their metropolitan areas and in their state, their economies are moving ahead at least 2 percentage points higher than the state of Minnesota. At least 2. And that's after they raised taxes, Senator Ortman. I'm sorry if I used the T word and hooked it to your name, Senator Ortman, but it is personal. It's personal for everybody.
There being no further discussion, the Secretary will take the roll on final passage of House File 946. Thank you.
How many?
Senate is under call. Secretary will close the roll. There being 47 ayes and 17 noes, the House File 947, the bill is passed and its title agreed to.
Madam President. Madam President.
Senator Pogamiller. Under motions and resolutions, Senator Senjum.
Senator Senjum moves that his name be stricken as a co-author to Senate File 886.
On the motion, all in favor, please say aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails.
And Senator Berglund has a motion.
Senator Berglund.
I move that House File 1078, Number 7 on General Orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration.
On the motion, all those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Senator Tomasoni.
Madam President, I move that House File 122, Number 16 on General Orders, be stricken and be re-referred to the Committee on Rules.
On the motion, all in favor, please say aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Senator.
Madam President.
Senator Pogamiller.
I move the Senate do now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Madam President.
Senator Pogamiller.
I would like to, I think we should take up two items today. That would be number three on general orders, Senate File 653, the DREAM Act. And number 43, Senate File 886, a Vickerman resolution to Congress. So I'd yield to Senator Pappas.
The committee shall be in order. Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 653 be recommended to pass.
Senator Pappas has moved that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 653 be recommended to pass. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. During the debate on the higher ed bill, many members asked if we could just take up the Minnesota Dream Act as a separate bill. So I thought it was important to do that. I also think that because so many young people all over our state have worked so hard to convince us and the Chamber of Commerce and the church community and other community leaders that this is so important for their future and for our future, that I thought that we really needed to pass it on the Senate floor. Today's broken immigration system is being used to prevent many of Minnesota's brightest high school graduates from pursuing their dreams and a better future by being charged out-of-state tuition rates in our public, in most of our public colleges. We do have some that only charge in-state rates to all comers. This is unfair because these students were brought to this country, many of them as young children, and they've lived here their entire lives. They feel very American, and they've been contributing to the well-being of their schools. Many of these students are honor students, class presidents, team captains, and community leaders. They've already had to overcome numerous barriers in order to succeed. But now, when faced with college, their families simply can't afford to pay for out-of-state tuition. 11 other states have already authorized in-state tuition for students who qualify under the following circumstances. They have to have attended high school within the state for at least 3 years, graduate from a Minnesota high school, be accepted to a Minnesota college, and sign an affidavit with their school stating they are or they will seek U.S. citizenship when a path becomes available. The other states that have passed this are California, Texas, Washington, New York, Oklahoma, Illinois, Kansas, Utah, Mississippi, Nebraska, and New Mexico, a very wide variety of states across the country, and there are 18 others that are considering passing similar legislation. As I mentioned, the Chamber of Commerce also supports this legislation and thinks that these kids are here, they've been educated in our K-12 schools, and at some point, there will be a path to legal status. And at that point, it's going to be much better that we've educated these kids and they're ready to enter the workforce than to have them forced into an underground economy. So I really appreciate your support.
Further discussion on Senate File 653. Senator Moore.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Today has been a wonderful day as we celebrated our mothers and dedicate this day to our mothers. And I know that many of our mothers who are watching us are proud and happy and smiling down upon us, because what mothers and fathers expect and ask is that their children do well, care about others, contribute to their communities. And so today, I know that there are many, many parents out there, like my parents, who have tremendous hopes and dreams and aspirations for their children. And so, members, I stand up today to ask for your support of the DREAM Act on behalf of all the mothers and fathers in our community who have brought their children to this country from such a far, far away places. And in their children, they have projected all their hopes and aspirations, hopes and dreams for the future, because they know that they themselves have never had those opportunities. And many of these parents don't mind cleaning toilets, picking pickles, cutting cabbage, spending the time doing the things that they need to do to make sure that their children can have a future. So, members, I ask that this Minnesota State Senate today cast a unanimous vote on that board in favor of the DREAM Act, the American dream for many, many of our children. And I'm not just speaking for myself, but I'm standing in this chamber today to ask you on behalf of the many parents out there who are asking all of us, hoping that we all will be their voices and will vote for their children's future. I want to share with you a letter that I received from one of those mothers. And she says, "Please, Senator, have compassion for my children and keep the dream alive. Don't keep my children from having a bad future. I've worked hard to give my children a Christian education and moral values, but we need you to be brave and stand up for what you know is right. Please vote green and vote with all of us to keep the dream, the American dream, alive for all Minnesotans.
Is there further discussion? Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I am asking for your support today. And I would like to thank Senator Pappas for all the work that you've done to get to this point. This has been a very long journey, particularly for the many families who came here with their young children and are now ready to support their children in their next step, which is to send them to college. I would like to let the members know that an overwhelming majority of these children have been here for many, many years. They came here when they were very young. And these are children who have played by the rules. These children went to school. These children have done their work, and they have graduated, and they really want to go to school now. They want to go to the university. It will be very, very difficult for many of us to go back right now and to say that we didn't support their effort, that we didn't have the courage to vote in support of this bill. I want you to know that for many of us, but particularly for those of us who share the ethnicity with some of these children, it is very painful to look at the statistics today. You probably know that 40% of Latino children are dropping out of school before they finish, before they graduate. And many of you may say, well, it is their fault. They can finish high school. But what is happening is that many of these children are working full-time, and they are being pushed by their parents to get out of school and to go to work because they have to support their families. So I am asking members for your support today, and I'm very proud to be here with many of you. We have been working on this together. I have been here for just a few months, but I know that there is bipartisan support. I very much hope that all of us can vote yes today just to send a message of hope to these children. Thank you.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 653? Senator Coring.
Madam Chair, thank you. Would Senator Pappas yield for a question?
Senator Pappas, do you yield for a question? She does. Senator Coring.
Madam Chair and Senator Pappas, I just would like you to really explain this in a very simplistic way. What it is the way I understand it, is somebody that's gone to high school for 3 years, they get in-state tuition. Is that correct?
Senator Pappas?
Madam Chair and Senator Coring, you have to graduate. Of course, you have to be accepted at the college, and you have to fill out the affidavit. And that applies to the undocumented kids. If you are a student coming from Iowa, for example, it only takes you a year to establish residency. And, you know, you don't have to have graduated from Minnesota high school.
Okay.
Senator Coring.
Well, I would just say, I just want to say that I actually don't think we need this, because in talking to the college, I actually talked to the Central Lakes College administration up in my district about this, and they said it's a non-issue because they don't charge in-state tuition. And there's a lot of schools in the state that don't charge in-state tuition, and I think we're moving that direction, so I actually don't think we need this.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, for workforce purposes, we are moving toward flat tuition or resident-only tuition, but there's still a lot. We're not there yet. I mean, the University of Minnesota, we don't have. We have resident, non-resident tuition. There's no four-year school in the metropolitan area that is offering only resident tuition. So there's a few schools where we've moved in that direction, but, you know, not St. Cloud, not Rochester, not. There's still plenty of areas around the state, including the metropolitan area. All the two-year colleges in the metropolitan area are all have resident and non-resident tuition. It's only in the areas like your area where there was a population issue and they were trying to attract more people to the area that the colleges asked to go to in-state tuition only. And, you know, I think that's been somewhat successful. And, for example, at Crookston is in-state tuition, and Morris is in-state tuition only. But these are kids who are very tied to their families. They don't necessarily have the money to pay for room and board. Often they have to work to also support their families. They may have to go to school part-time. They're not the traditional student that can, you know, that can go to St. Cloud and live on campus. So we really need to be sensitive about where the access points are going to be. And if we were able to, you know, not worry about the whole process of moving to flat tuition, but just adopt the DREAM Act, we're talking about 500 kids probably who are going to be eligible, and just get them educated. And yeah, they want to be dentists, they want to be veterinarians. They have very, very high ambitions. They're very smart kids, the kids who've been working on this, the ones that haven't already become discouraged by the whole process. And we really need to give them a chance.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 653? Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, I'm going to rise in support of this DREAM Act, and I will tell you why. Because down in my rural district, about 60%, more than that, are Latinos. We have a large Hmong families that live away from me. I don't want these kids to work in a slaughterhouse. If you've ever been to a slaughterhouse, it's not the place to work. I want to give them an education. I want them to be part of our community, and I want them to be top-notch. And we have to provide that. You just can't have them do the mediocre work that most of us don't want to do. They're going to be in my community. They're going to live in my community. They're going to marry each other in our community. And they're going to be part of our community. So we need to give them a chance to move up. So I stand behind this, Senator Pappas, 100%.
Is there further discussion? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would Senator Pappas yield?
Senator Pappas, do you yield for a question?
Senator Pappas, I'm not insensitive to what you're trying to do here. But one of the things I do hear often from people is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, the student moves through the process, gets a degree, and now the question is, can they legally work in Minnesota? Are they able to legally, under the laws that we have, can they get a job in Minnesota?
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair and Senator Senjum, you bring up a very real and a very serious problem. There is not a way for them to get a green card and permission to work right now. The federal government needs to change their immigration laws to have more of a sane immigration policy. But my rationale is that I don't know how many years it's going to take the federal government to do that. They seem to be moving a little more quickly now. And better that we have kids that are educated than we wait another 4 years until they're totally discouraged, and then we start educating them. This way, we're educating them, and if in 4 years the federal government has provided a path for them to get a green card or to working papers, then they're going to be ready, they're going to be skilled, they're going to be nurses, they're going to be, you know, teachers, they're going to be prepared, and we need to really get them prepared.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 653? Seeing none, a roll call has been requested. Are there three hands for a roll call? There being no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Pappas that Senate File 653 be recommended to pass. The Secretary will take the roll. Have all members voted who desire to vote? The secretary will close the roll. There being 44 ayes and 19 noes, the motion prevails. The next bill on general orders is number 43, Senate File 886, Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 886 be recommended to pass.
Senator Vickerman, discussion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, this is a resolution memorializing the President and Congress to promote the United States' ability to compete in a global marketplace for talented and necessary workers. Whereas immigration policy is set at the federal level, but the actual benefits and challenges of immigration are felt at the state and local levels, discrimination on the basis of race, color, creed, religion, and national origin is prohibited by the Minnesota Human Rights Act as well as the United States Constitution. Whereas state and local resources should be used to safeguard children and strengthen communities, not to support a broken federal immigration system, particularly where public safety is placed at risk. And whereas the number of Minnesota high school graduates will peak in 2008, sending fewer young people into the workforce, and at the same time, baby boomers will be leaving the workforce at record rates. So Minnesota's future economic success will depend on people migrating to Minnesota from other states and countries. Whereas it is beneficial for new immigrants, the host communities, state, and the nation, for immigrants to quickly adjust to and integrate into life in Minnesota, learn English, become citizens, buy homes, start businesses, send their children to college, and thrive economically. Be it resolved that legislators of the state of Minnesota, that the Congress of the United States should speedily enact a comprehensive immigration reform that includes provisions that prioritize and expedite family reunification, expansion of the number of both high and low-skill work visas that satisfy the workforce demand of local communities in agriculture and business industries, and provisions that support a competitive grant program to fund certified entities to provide civics and English classes, federal reimbursement of hospitals for emergency care of undocumented immigrants, and legislation that provides federal impact aid to the state of Minnesota. Members of the Senate, we're going to need this workforce more than we ever have. And so I would hope that you would join me in just sending, and I have bipartisan support, I thank Senator Sinjum for signing on the bill. We just need to send this message and hope that Congress will react to it.
A further discussion on Senate File 886. Seeing none, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Vickerman that Senate Resolution 886 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Porter-Miller.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee do now arise and report.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate is in order.
Mr. President,
Senator Porter-Miller.
I move that the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Senator Porter-Miller. Is there messages from the House? Is there any other work at the desk?